riding in a difficult time here with false attacks having been levied against my programming. You know, one of the things they did ask me to do on CII is to try to bring a few extra referencing to the facts that I share with you on this broadcast, and I will try to do that. Much of what has been stated on the French Connection can be found on my website. And that website is iamthewitness.com. And I apologize to people with slow internet access. If their speed is very slow, it takes a while for my front page to add on their screen. And the problem with that is I don't have a fast connection here by first world standards, but by people out in the farthest reaches of Africa and areas like that, we still have slower connection speed. So I'm trying to whittle down the size of the front page so you all can have access to the information more easily. But the documentation has been done, especially about the things around 9/11. We know that the involvement of Israel in that attack is beyond argument at this point. The airlines flew out of two cities principally during that whole thing, and both of them were being guarded by a company called Huntley International, which is the children of a founder of the Mossad from Israel. This founder's children started this company, Huntley International, and a subsidiary or a filial of that company was the security at Logan's Boston International Airport as well as the Newark Airport. We also know that Mr. Frank Lowy involved out of Australia was involved in the purchase of the buildings along with Silverstein. We know the amount of information that has come out against Israel having been involved in this with the help of elements within Britain and elements within the American government itself are absolutely beyond argument at this point. And so much so that I don't spend a whole lot of time on that. I think we've already proven that one. Does it get mainstream play? Not like it should, of course. But the fact is 9/11 and 7/7 in London were both staged attacks. And they had nothing to do with Islam. They were not Muslims involved. You all will recall that many of the people blamed for the 9/11 attack were actually still alive, and so it was a fraud from the start. But other things that we discussed the other day about world Zionism and why would anybody purport support for such an organization in the face of the things that we know about this organization. And the fact is, Zionism is not Judaism, although the leaders of Zionism are Jewish. But it would be like saying that all Italians are bad because of what the La Cosa Nostra or the Mafia, Italian Mafia, does. Of course, we know better than saying that all Italians are bad, and it would be ridiculous to make that statement. Would you be angry at somebody? Basically, Zionism is a political movement or a geopolitical movement that has its support base in Christianity in the United States. Over the last 40 years, they've built a very powerful Zionist following in Christianity, sadly, for the rest of us. But we also see Zionist governments in the Middle East. We see Jordan is a Zionist-controlled government. We see Egypt, a Zionist-controlled government. Up until recently, we saw that Turkey was completely Zionist-controlled, and they have been since the caliphate was overthrown. We see that Morocco is a sympathetic government to Zionism. So, we know that this is a movement that has many players and many elements. And for me to tell you that that every Jew is involved would be a bold-faced lie, and I've never made that statement. So be clear that we are looking for honest, good, righteous people from the Jewish community who don't want any part of this. Another thing that I said last week was that 40% of the Jewish community is not in support of Zionism. Well, that's not a misstatement. Out of the 16 million worldwide in the Jewish community, many people in the Jewish community have left their religion. They no longer go to synagogue, and they have married women outside of Judaism. In other words, men have married women who are not Jews, and vice versa. Women have married men who are not Jews. And they don't go to synagogue. They're not religious. And their numbers are growing. And in fact, there have been many, many articles written about the exodus from the Jewish religion because of things that people clearly found maybe objectionable or whatever in their faith. But also people not wanting to migrate and immigrate into Israel. You know, this mass migration that took place after the fall of the Soviet Union puffed up their numbers for a very long time, but that has certainly leveled off and now is no longer growing as they once had. And then, of course, there are organizations and groups across the world right now that are absolutely against what's been done in Palestine, and they are screaming at the top of their lungs, even in Israel. And the fact is, you can get better reporting on these people that don't want Zionism to be doing these crimes in Israel than you can in the United States. Why? Because, of course, the press in the United States and all the major networks are in the hands of this group. And that is also beyond argument. You can look that up in any place that you want to. Just type in American press controlled by Zionism, and you will find probably thousands of articles to read about this. You know, the top management, the main investors, all the anchor people, the people reporting the news, the people doing the CNN reports, and Christiane Amanpour and all of the rest of them that have spun the lie machine. What's her name? Khan there. Anyway, this woman from CNN that did a hit piece on several people in the truth movement not 2 years ago. Paula Zahn, her name was. Another Zionist Jew that was working against the facts to come out. So, yes, there is proof and evidence for all of these accusations. They're not accusations. They are facts once you've looked at the evidence. So I don't shoot from the hip here. The research has been done. And, you know, the research has also been done on the financial malaise that we're all suffering. You know, even the bad guys now, which they are responsible for the mess, they committed a mass larceny, a mass crime against the countries of the world by stealing from the public purse through puffing up credit markets and then imploding them as they have now. And what we see is a financial failure is on our immediate horizon here. We know this is true. We know the people involved in it are clearly in from the same camp that we have been describing for the longest time. And now we see a Rothschild agent starting to take over banks or the management of banks here in France. No lies involved in this, ladies and gentlemen. And recently, AmericanFreePress.net, if you go to that website, Michael Collins Piper wrote an article about the 10 most powerful people in the Obama administration being Zionists, and that they work for Rothschild. And it's very clear, and he puts them on here, named Peter Orszag and Office of Management and Budget, and Peter Roos, and Lawrence Summers, and Ezekiel Emanuel, and, I mean, the list goes on. And, yes, all of these things are researchable. So when someone makes a statement that we don't have the we're not making statements of fact, I beg to differ, and I will debate anybody on these facts anytime they wish, including the people we discussed last week, which I will make a comment about that. You know, the radio station and me particularly being assaulted for the content of my programming here was nothing more than an attempt to silence the truth. And the fact is that the radio station has had the good sense and the strength to say, wait a minute here, the things that Mr. Smith has been saying on this programming, as far as we can tell, are right on the money. And then I brought up the fact that why would anybody be supporting the kinds of killings that have gone on in Palestine? And, in fact, the group that I focused on last week is supporting Israel's assault on Gaza and the Palestinians. That's a fact. Now, it would be a good idea, I think, for everybody to present this information to the press that is not controlled in your country or South Africa or the world and say, wait a minute, how about let's take a look at how the people feel about this. And I will guarantee that that they will support my message. I guarantee it. And they will not only support it in 51%, they'll support it in mass, in the 80, 90% range. I guarantee that. But they don't want to argue about facts. They want to make false statements about me being anti-Semitic, which is the old canard, ladies and gentlemen, that people have been getting basted with liberally over the last 50 years. And the simple truth is it's not accurate and it's not true. So another thing I want to bring up with you folks, recently it was brought to my attention through an article that PepsiCo, you're all familiar with Pepsi, the soft drink company that also makes Quaker Oats, and they also make Tropicana orange juice and some other products, has been investing in promoting homosexual and gay lifestyles. They in fact gave an advertising campaign millions of extra dollars to try to promote homosexuality. Why would a company do that? I have absolutely no idea. But a group in America called the Family—I don't know where they are right now—but it's a group that cares about family values. Basically, has come out and said that they would like to see the world boycott these products from PepsiCo, Tropicana, and Quaker Oats, and Pepsi soda, different brands within Pepsi's marks. Like I think Mountain Dew is made by Pepsi as well. I personally am in agreement with this woman that I read about. She said that we should boycott them. I think we should. You know, I am not against people who have made lifestyle choices based upon their predisposition for being homosexual. And I got to tell you, it's been my experience that there are some people, some men and some women that I've met that are this way and probably were from birth. And so, you know, how is it that I could blame somebody for something like that? I could not. I wouldn't do that. My problem is, and I would like the listeners to think about this, my problem is that they're trying to promote this as a choice for others, not predisposed. They're trying to make this a first choice for people who would not normally ever be disposed to this kind of ideal. And I am fully and completely against that. That's wrong-headed thinking. It's problematic in many, many ways, from a health standpoint as well as a social and family standpoint, and I find it to be offensive in the extreme that they would be doing this kind of promoting, and I urge everybody to consider boycotting their products, to send them a message that that's not the kind of values you want people to have, and especially trying to sell you products. That being said, tonight's programming we're going to be bringing on here in just a moment is with a friend of mine named Andrew Carrington Hitchcock. We worked together on a timeline of the Rothschilds. It has been the most downloaded story on my website over the last 3 years since we posted it on the site. It's had millions of hits, millions of downloads. And it was put together originally by Andrew under the name of Anonymous Andy, and it came from information he gleaned from my website, and we started putting it together, and each 2 or 3 weeks, Andrew would find new information and add to the list, and we would get more stuff out, and they're fine today is it turned actually into a book called The Synagogue of Satan, and it is a very detailed timeline on the Rothschilds' involvement in the world's power structure and control. And we're going to bring him up in just a minute after these messages. So we'll be right back after these messages, ladies and gentlemen.
Assalamu alaikum, listeners. This is Usman Ahmed from Shure Flywire Travel. We have a 13-night, 14-day Umrah tour departing on Saudi Arabian Airlines. Departures are the 9th of April, returning on the 23rd of April, departing 13th April, returning 27th April, departing 20 April, return 4 May. 6 nights in Medina Munawwara at the Sufra Al Huda Hotel in Medina with breakfast. 7 nights in Makkah Mukarrama at the Makkah Towers, a room only. The complete package from Johannesburg, sharing 2 in a room, is 1745 per person, or 4 in a room at 133 per person. For any further information, you're welcome to visit our website, sureflywell.com, or you're welcome to contact our office in Pretoria, 012-374-2041, or Cape Town, 021-761-5000. 5044.
The recent intense aerial bombardment on Gaza has left scores of people killed and hundreds more injured. The bombings have taken the lives of civilians, including women and children. The blockade of Gaza has also forced more than half of its 1.5 million population to be dependent on humanitarian assistance. The Al-Imdad Foundation has been delivering humanitarian and developmental assistance in Palestine through our partners in Gaza and by our offices in Amman, Jordan, for the last 5 years. Donate online by visiting alimdad.com or call 0861-786-243 for more information.
The French Connection with Daryl Bradford Smith.
Great to be back, ladies and gentlemen. We have our guest coming up, Andrew Carrington Hitchcock. We're going to discuss some of the, and in fact, we're going to bring forward some facts about the history of this particular family, this family called Red Shield or Rothschild, and not necessarily their beginnings, because I think everybody who's spent any time listening to the French Connection knows the beginnings of this, this what I'm going to call a supremacist crime gang internationally. But the South African audience as well has a history with these people that needs to be clarified as well. And I thought it would be a good idea to maybe chew up a few of the facts and put them out before the South African and Pan-African public, because Africa is the new target for resources, as it has been for the last 25, 30 years. And it's intensifying. As there are depletions coming in other parts of the world, such as Australia and such, and they're looking toward areas of the globe where they can go in and displace the native populations, either that or get these native peoples to stop working in their mines or in their factories or in whatever else that they can put together. So, but I'm going to bring them up right now. Andrew Carrington Hitchcock, are you? Andrew.
Hello, Daryl.
Andrew, are you there?
Yes, can you hear me, Daryl?
We've got a bad connection there for Andrew. Maybe you'll bring him back up in just a moment, try to get that line cleared again, engineer. Yeah, well, what we do know, ladies and gentlemen, is that at the beginning of the last century, 1900 to 1908, was an intensive period of displacement for people in South Africa, culminating in what was commonly known as the Boer War. What it ended up doing is shifting the power structure in that country from the hands of the agrarian residents to a more industry-centered government that from behind the scenes was controlled lock, stock, and barrel by elements within those 1 square mile of London and the Jewish community out of New York, as well as family members of these people in South Africa itself. And sadly for us, this group succeeded in their aims of subjugating South Africa and forcing its population, because of starvation and terrible hardship, into these mines that they built. And then they began to exploit the mineral wealth of the country, often extracting 80 to 90% of its value and spiriting that value out of the country. Now, the infrastructure that was built in Cape Town and Johannesburg and Pretoria and other areas was certainly came from the business element there that were running these mining organizations. But the profits that had been taken out were, in fact, going into the hands of this pool of criminals, in my view. Are we back with Andrew Carrington Hitchcock? We still don't have Andrew there. My engineer, maybe you can. Andrew, are you with me?
Hello, Daryl.
Oh, Andrew, you sound like you're way in the background there. Are we connected correctly here, Andrew?
I could hardly hear you, Daryl. I can't do this.
This is a very bad connection, my engineer. Maybe what we'll have to do here is get another phone call over to him and see if we can't make this connection once again. I will. I hope I don't have to speak for the whole 2 hours here, because I will just shrivel up and croak here. But Okay, and anyway, this is now taking place. The same events that took place in South Africa or similar events are now taking place in the Congo region. And Congo has, what they've done is they've fomented terrible battles between ethnic minorities within the far-flung areas of the Congo in order to clear out land rights and clear out access for these the next mineral grab, if you will. And you will be able to guarantee that the Congo will never profit largely from this, and most of the value of that will be taken from the Congolese and shipped out. It's also happening in the Sudan, in Chad, and they're setting up the same kind of situation in Zimbabwe, expanding the mining industry there. So the painful truth, ladies and gentlemen, is that this is an ongoing exploitation. It has been orchestrated by this group over time, and that what we need to do now is to expose it to as many people as we can, along with the rest of these criminal conspiracies that we have so aptly described to you on these broadcasts. We are certainly in a very tight spot right now, because it is my belief that it's going to be very difficult for us to fight back against this crime gang if we are not getting our sustenance, our food stuffs, and so forth. So a little sidebar here, a little issue that I have been promoting quite heavily, is that people start planting their own gardens. This is an important element to their own survival, people having the ability to feed themselves, at least in a minimal sense, by tilling up a plot of land on their own property or finding a place to till and placing those seeds into that ground and tending that garden until it harvests, and being able to start supplying more of your own food needs, which is an important element to all of our survivals in this world. So it is my suggestion that you do that. This gives power back to you in the event that these problems actually become worse than they already are, and in my view. We've got Andrew back on the line. Andrew, are you with me?
Yes, Darrell. Could you hear me?
Ah, that's much better, Andrew. Great to have you here, my friend.
Yeah, good to be doing the show with you. The home phone didn't work, so they went out on my cell phone.
Ah, that's very strange that the home phone didn't work. Those are the ones that usually do work.
Yeah, well, we always get a better line on that, don't we? It was always the other way around for you and me when we've had our private calls and previous shows.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know what? I was just describing to the public here the idea that back at the turn of the last century, the period called the Boer Wars in South Africa was in fact a mineral grab and it was actually a coup d'état, if you will, because they came down with their forces under Mr. Oppenheimer and Mr. Rothschild and the British military, and pretty much kicked the tar out of the country, knocked its farming industry into destruction, and then killed off a lot of its farmers, and then started exploiting the mineral wealth. And is that an accurate overview of this this whole period in history?
Yes, it is. I mean, essentially, they needed to move the farmers out of the way so they could get the land that was under their feet that had all these minerals in it. And I looked into a bit more about Harry Oppenheimer, and basically, I found some very interesting things about him. He died when he was about 90 off in 2000. Now, in his will, he left £30 million. That was what he left in his will. And his wealth was estimated at £3 billion. But his will declared his personal wealth at £30 million. And this is something that we know a lot of billionaires do. They put the bulk of their fortune in a trust to protect the assets for the future benefit of his descendants. And so whereas you and I, when you or I die, we'll have up to a certain amount, and then we have to pay, well, in England, you have to pay 40% tax on everything, I think, above a quarter of a million. And so this guy's able to keep all $3 billion for his descendants. And they describe these trusts, oh, well, they're they give to different organisations and universities. Well, yeah, it's quite easy to give a few million when you get the opportunity to protect billions, you know, and this is just what they get away with. Anybody in this Zionist group, they can, when they die, they get to not pay any tax whatsoever. When we die, we have to give half of ours back to the state, and that is why you have this perpetual situation that they control the wealth of the world, and we get nothing.
Well, you know, you're very correct in all of that, and the fact is, trusts have been used by families like the Warburgs. What we know is that you're in Europe, they are controlling mass amounts of assets and companies through trust agreements, but the Rothschilds have used the same approach as well as many of the larger Zionist Jewish families in the United States. And so when they pool those resources together, it is almost hands down the largest block of money and power control on our planet, without a doubt.
Well, yes. In this article that I got on this subject from mainstream source, actually, there's a quote here. It says, attempts to minimize debt duties through the use of trust funds are legal, but questions are bound to be asked about the ethical implications of South Africa's richest individual protecting his vast personal wealth from taxation in a country where millions of people live in grinding poverty and where the government does not have the resources to improve their lot. And after his death, who said it was Nelson Mandela and Thabo Mbeki, they paid tribute to Oppenheimer, and they stated, for building the economy and creating employment for hundreds of thousands of South African citizens. And that just goes to show you...
Yeah. Last week, I made a mistake, Andrew, when I was doing my intro rant about saying the Prime Minister being marshaled around the world as a spokesperson for Zionism. It was actually their ex-president who they've used...
Yeah.
In a very communist way to promote much of the this Zionist dogma. Now, what we do know also is that when I looked into a couple of these largest gold mines in South Africa, most of the ownership was in the largest New York and London banks. They were the people controlling the largest block of shares in these corporations. And so basically, they were spiriting out of South Africa much of the wealth, the mineral wealth, and you can tell that the promises the government has made, and you pointed it out in this article, that Thabo Mbeki has made and others have made throughout history to solve some of the problems of the poorest of the poor of South Africa living in some of the most difficult areas, has never been met, and it's always been because there wasn't enough funding or money. The fact is, the money has been plentiful. It's just been being taken out of the country and put in the hands of other, well, of this crime gang that we've been fighting is what's been happening. But that's not unique, is it? We've seen this go on in many countries in the world, including the United States and in France where I am and in Britain, of course. You want to expound on some of the other things that you discovered when you looked at this?
Well, yes, I mean, and again, you know, we can see this wealth there. The people of South Africa aren't seeing it, and they wouldn't see it from Nelson Mandela, because he was nothing but a terrorist. He wrote a book, How to Be a Good Communist, or rather a pamphlet, and the ANC in South Africa, high up in there, was Albie Sachs and Joe Slovo, both Jews that were white in appearance.
Let's talk about Albie Sachs and Slovo. Let's talk about who they are, where they're from, and what's the significance of these two people.
Right, well, Slovo actually ended up in Nelson Mandela's first administration as Minister of Housing, which is probably why you've still got all the shanty towns there now that you had when he walked in. The significance of these two individuals is it goes to show the link between Zionism and communism, and the fact that them going into the ANC was nothing more than a communist organisation, and it was designed to say, hey, we've ended apartheid and the power's gone to the black man in Africa. Well, if the power's gone to the black man in Africa, then why are these people still living, well, certainly in the same poverty, but in a system that's far worse than it was under apartheid? You've got a rape every minute. It's the most crime-ridden country per capita in the world. And it's just it's terrible. And
but you know darn well, see, what they've been able to do is to sell the public through propaganda, through their airwaves, that things are going to get better, things are going to get better, things are going to, we'll get better housing, better streets, better water, better schools, better health facilities. And the promises keep rolling off their tongues, and basically what we end up getting is more of the same. And when you look behind the scenes of this, like this man Slobo and the other, they're working directly for Zionist interests worldwide, including the interests of these exploited, the exploiting mines that have been the mainstay of their economy. And so what they've done is they've implemented a communist regime, but they don't implement communism over the natural resources of the country. They leave that in the hands of the criminals. So basically, these people are getting none of the benefits that they deserve, and their national wealth is being stolen.
Well, absolutely. And, I go through the Communist Manifesto in my book, as it was read in the Congress from the Congressional Record back in the 60s. And people think communism is one thing, and it's the dividing of wealth amongst the people. Well, that's the propaganda they use, but they don't look at all the other things of communism, which is basically the mixing up of all societies, the removal of national borders. Their biggest threat to it was Germany, Britain, the great cities that were built, the thriving economies. And so, and they didn't want areas in Africa to develop either, so they started taking their workers and putting them into Western European countries. And so rather than these people have the opportunity to develop their own countries, they move them into a country that's already developed, and then overpopulate that and create unrest because they put one group against another. If people live in perpetual, not necessarily fear, but really not even having an identity, and we don't have an identity anymore in any of these Western European countries because we're forced via political correctness to accept everything, that they want us to accept. And there's a lot to be gained from saying, I'm English, I look at my history, I'm proud of it, and I intend to, live a moral and ethical life so that my descendants can say the same and have left something behind for my country. But there's no such thing as a country that exists anymore because it's just populated by hundreds of different races, especially over in Western Europe.
Well, I'm not so much against it. See, if somebody were to move into my country from a different race, all I expect is that they start adopting the cultural norms that the society they're moving into has. I mean, that is the prerequisite. But see, that's not what they're promoting. They're promoting, that when you arrive, you can be segregated into your own little world. And it happened they did it intentionally here in France with the Algerian population who they moved in. They ghettoized these people. They put them in apartments stacked high, with very little access to an improvement in their situation. And then when they didn't offer these people opportunities and they didn't integrate them into the French society, they turned around and blamed the immigrants themselves for the lack of the government's work. But I'm telling you, Andrew, that was a policy decision done intentionally so that at any moment they want, they can spark unrest in the society, which they have done repeatedly. And they did these, they did not integrate these groups into France or into Britain intentionally so that they would have a means of creating social unrest. And they've done it with the Turks in Germany. They've done it with the Moroccans in Spain. They've done it with many groups throughout Europe, but they do it with the Latinos in the United States. This is a tried and true tested crime method of creating problems, and they do it by saying, "Oh well, you don't have to integrate into the society you move into." That's poppycock. You know it is. I came to France here, and my first goal was to learn the language, and you must do that, and you must learn the French culture and stuff, because why would I expect to come to a foreign country and have them live by my methods and my rules?
Well, I totally agree 100% with what you said there, Daryl, and this is a subject we've sort of touched on before in previous shows that we've done, and it's always a dangerous subject to go near because people assume racism and what have you, but on what you've said there, I'd like to add, at the moment we're doing a show aimed at the Islam community primarily. I have absolutely no problem with Islam, but I would not convert to Islam. And at the same time, I wouldn't expect Muslims to convert to Christianity. We have our faith, they have their faith. But by bringing these cultures, say, over into the UK, I can talk about, because this is where I'm living, then you'll get this culture come over, and then they'll want to build their mosques and different things like that that isn't suited to this country. And so it creates division, because however much you force this political correct, oh, I think you have a perfect right to do this, a perfect right to do that, the division is there, because I agree with what you said. If someone's going to go over to another country, it has to be out of respect for that country, and they have to be prepared to take on their customs, their language, and their laws. But what this group do...
Yes, but at the same time, now one of the things, one of the areas that I've never thought people had to follow anybody's home rule was in the area of spirituality. Spiritual beliefs should be sacrosanct, and they should be allowed under any conditions to continue their strongest ties to their spiritual life. And by that I mean, if someone has interest in having a mosque, what it needs to be done here is that people need to understand that integrating into the society is not just whether a mosque exists or not, but rather, are you trying to integrate into the social fabric of the society in general? Do you work to forward the goals of the society in which you're living in? Now, for me, France is almost a religious free. Most of the people living in France are atheists. Sadly for the culture here, because the culture was based upon Christianity. But what's happened here is that people of faith are now being looked upon with consequence plans. And it's almost now where it's politically incorrect to have a faith, I think that's dangerous, because out of our faith, I've had the great pleasure of meeting so many people from Islam, and I grew up in a Christian culture. Now, the best of these two religions are very good in promoting a good quality morals, where you don't have loose sexual mores, and you don't have drug use and problematic behavior, and you're family orientated. These kinds of beliefs come from both of those communities and should be vaulted in our discussions. What we've got instead are these two cultures and these two good ideas of morality being destroyed by the people who control our television sets and our film industry and our pornography industry and the rest of it, and what they're doing is destroying family values. You didn't hear in the beginning, I did a thing about PepsiCo, where the PepsiCo company is spending millions of ad dollars to promote homosexuality worldwide. Now, these kinds of things destroy the quality of life of people and destroy faith in good family values. They destroy them. Now, when I see these kinds of things happening, I know it's by design. It's not mistaken. It's not somebody doing this by mistake, Andrew.
Yes, I agree with you, Daryl, and it all boils down to the fact that they, people do have a right to have these, the spirituality, the faith that they want, or the right to believe in God or not to believe in God. The problem is that there are situations, many people in the UK, that immigrants over here, and they cannot actually speak English. And so what hope have they got of integrating into the society? And so they remain, so the divisions remain to be seen. And naturally, if I was going to move to another country, as you moved to France, I would do it for love of that country, and I'd want to learn the language. It wouldn't be a problem for me, something that, would be something I couldn't be bothered to do, because that would be the reason that I went. And so you're going going to get these divisions, and by using political correctness to try and cover it up, it's not going to work. What's going to work is if people make an actual effort to integrate into the society. This is not required in the society, and that's how they get away with these divisions.
Well, you know, it used to be required in the United States that when you move to the United States, you were required to learn English as your first language, and that even after a generation, the immigrant's home language was almost, well, it wasn't completely forgotten, but their children grew up speaking, of course, the new language of their country, and the society made available people, you know, they could take lessons in English language. You could not become a citizen in the United States unless you knew English. Today, that's no longer true. Now, they offer driver's licenses in Spanish. They have Spanish welfare documentation where you go down and you get everything in Spanish. And my point is this, in itself causes serious divisions within a country. Now, when I get back to South Africa here for a moment, you know, the South African experience here of having one of the wealthiest natural resource nations on Earth, and not only that, one of the most beautiful with the coastline and the fishing industry and the wildlife and then the mineral wealth and the place is just a mountain of value in our world of so many different types. And yet, the public there has been bamboozled into believing that the way they've structured their economy is a benefit to the public when, in fact, it's anything but that. And what I'd like to talk about here is maybe the Oppenheimer and Rothschild backing through Britain of this Boer War and what its consequences were, so that the people are very clear in knowing that they had their nation stolen from them over 100 years ago.
Well, yes, exactly. And what basically happened there was the Rothschild-Oppenheimer link, and it's actually quite interesting. Again, if obviously you're aware that with Rothschild, it was decided from the first Rothschild that the women of the family would never have anything to do with the family business. Well, it was the same when Oppenheimer died. Not one of the seven Oppenheimer women has ever entered or shown any interest in taking over the reins of the dynasty, which is quite interesting, really, because Jews have a matriarchal society as opposed to, Muslims, Western Europeans having a patriarchal society. And so it's sort of goes against that, but it's consistent with Rothschild. We know the links there, and the fact is that they became aware of this mineral wealth, and they wanted it. They wanted to control it, and so they used the British Army, which was their, essentially, this was going back to the all the British colonies and what have you, so Britain were the a nation on which the sun never set around the world. So the most powerful army in the world, and they were the ones that were used as the Rothschild-Oppenheimer attack dogs to get their resources. So, again, a lot of British died for these people, as did a lot of Africans die. Mainly Afrikaners,
yes,
and so British died, they died, and Zionists got the money, which is what's happened in every war since.
That's right. Well, we've got a break coming up here, Andrew. I want to take a break for the sponsors. And so we'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen, just after these messages.
Business or pleasure. Huge savings guaranteed. Let us tailor a deal for you. From the half-tonner Nissan 1400 to the incredible hard-body workhorses. And the magnificent 4x2 and 4x4 double cabs and SUVs. Motor Deal Nissan also offer you Islamic finance. Pay no interest. Call Motor Deal at 016-981-2220 and save.
How much do you know about the history and preservation of the Quran? Are you seeking to enrich your relationship with the Quran? The Al-Kawthar Institute presents Treasures of Revelation, Principles of Tafsir by Sheikh Abu Abdissalam. Explore the reasons for revelation and some of the specific incidents that occurred during that period. All this and more taking place at the Wits Medical School in Johannesburg on the 28th February and Sunday the 1st of March. For ticket sales and bookings, call 082-740-8021.
Here's some good news for CII listeners. Get a free copy of the new edition of Sisters Volume 2 by Naima B. Roberts with a 50 Rand CII Stores gift voucher card for every Absa Islamic Bank account that you open. This incredible offer is only valid at Absa Bank CBD and at the Traderoute Mall in Asia. For more information, contact the store at 011-852-0097. Terms and conditions apply. CII Stores, Africa's leading Islamic store.
Zakia, how should I discharge my zakat?
Well, according to Sansaf publication, certain family members must be considered first.
Really?
Yes. Then your neighbor or someone in your neighborhood, then your city, then your country.
But how do I know if they qualify for zakat?
Well, that's why I give my zakat to Sansaf, because they perform all the necessary checks on my behalf.
Of course. Sansaf. How can I forget them?